Well, this evening I want to say a few words about Sangha, and then after having done so, open it up to a kind of a general discussion, because that's what we are. The word has had different meanings over the years, over the history of Buddha Dharma. One of my teachers in my seminary program at Spirit Rock, Community Dharma Leader Training Program, was a Theravada monk named Ajahn Amaro. And he gave us a little talk while we were there about Sangha and the different meanings of the word. And one meaning is simply purposeful collection. He said you can have a Sangha of birds, you know, for instance. And I thought that maybe that just meant a heap of anything. But he took it a little bit deeper than that. He said, especially flocking birds, if you watch them in the air together, you can tell that they move almost as if of one mind. You know, that the level of intercommunication and coordination between them is extraordinary, right? In the realm of Buddha Dharma, the most frequently used simile of the Buddha was what he called being on the path, the Eightfold Path. And that's depicted by this Dharma chakra that we have here on the altar. You know, the eight spokes of the Eightfold Path, the means by which one can attain ultimate freedom. So we have the meditative qualities of the cultivation of concentration, of making wise effort, of developing mindfulness. And then when the mind is thus clear and sound and capable of really taking in knowledge, then we have what are called the wisdom factors, the development of insight into all the causes and conditions that gave rise to who we are, paticca samuppada, codependent arising, right? So gaining an understanding or wisdom with regard to the nature of things. And then having gained, and that's one of the reasons we call it insight meditation, it's cultivating the wisdom of who we are and why, and what we might do about it, right? And then the other wisdom factor of wise or right intention, based upon that knowledge of who we truly are and how we've been conditioned to think and act, then at the ability to have insight into our own intentions going forward and to seek to assure that when we do speak or act, that it is with beneficial intention. Bring about the cessation of suffering instead of its perpetuation. The last three spokes on the wheel are the manifestation of that wise intention in the form of how we speak and how we act and how we make our way in the world. The only reason that we are around to even be having this talk and be sharing the Dharma, okay, is because when the Buddha talked about going on the path, he also spoke in terms of what he called the three refuges or the triple chin. And by that he meant on this path, which can sometimes feel solitary or difficult, there need to be places where the mind can come to be at rest and at ease and to feel supported and safe. One of these is taking refuge in the Buddha. That can be the memory of the historical Buddha, the fact that he was in fact able to achieve freedom by the means that he teaches. Another is taking refuge in your own Buddha nature, okay? Your own inherent wisdom and compassion, your own ability to self-liberate, basically. Taking refuge in the Dharma, it can mean developing knowledge of the Buddha's teachings and their depth and their richness, and gaining an understanding of how they can indeed lead to liberation. It can mean come to be able to increasingly trust your ability to know things as they are, your Dharma. So these two refuges are places for the mind to alight and to rest and to come to trust itself more deeply. The third refuge is the refuge of Sangha, or community. When I think of reflect on the term Sangha, simile that I know a lot of you have heard me use before is like when I was walking in a redwood forest once and put my hand on the trunk of a redwood tree, okay, about 2,500 years old, 2,600 years old over in Northern California, about the same age as Buddhism, okay. If you look at the mass of a tree like that, about 80% of the tree is dead. It is simply the heartwood in the trunk and the wood at the core of all the branches. Okay. The only living parts of the tree are the very external skin of the circulatory system that brings nutrients up from the live tips of the roots down in the ground, okay, up through the exterior of the tree, out into the branches, and to the leaves and the growth buds, you know. Those are the living parts of the tree. Everything else is a dead supporting structure. So every year, the tree grows a fresh circulatory system, right? And that which had been the circulatory system in years gone by becomes dead hardwood. One way to think about Sangha in the present day is that we are, you know, just as is the case everywhere in the world where Buddha's Dharma is being taught, okay, we are the living tissue on the skin of that 2,500-year-old tree. So we benefit from this structure that's been around for 2.5 millennia. And by our very presence, by the reason of the fact that we come together and we practice the meditations that the Buddha taught, that we study together the teachings with regard to how to attain ultimate freedom, okay, that we seek to practice them, in the way that we talk to each other, in the way that we treat each other, okay. That is how the Dharma has been perpetuated over this last 2,500 years. We are part of that process now. It only happens because of the existence of Sangha. If there had not been Buddha Dharma Sanghas, one after another, generation after generation after generation, over the last 2,500 years, we would not be here. And for the last 2,500 years in Theravada Buddhism, whenever members of a Sangha have gotten together to practice, or when they've been practicing alone and they're doing metta practice, you know, may all beings be happy, may all beings be peaceful, may all beings be free. All beings, both seen and unseen, all beings now alive, all beings yet to be born. For 2,500 years, they've been sending us metta. That's why we're here also. Okay? Because of their beneficial intention that we be able to benefit from the Buddha's teachings. We don't have paid staff. We don't have titles, we don't have uniforms, we don't get big wads of money from some national denominational offices. We are it, you know, especially in the practice, and Sangha is based upon the teachings in the Theravada tradition. This is literally do-it-yourself Dharma. Okay. why the Dharma is, or why the Sangha is so crucial, why there would be no Buddhism today if it were not for Sanghas, is because they, from that time, from the earliest time to the present day, have performed some really vital functions. As a refuge, they have been a place to gather where we can feel safe, a place to gather where we feel supported, a place to gather where we feel that we can trust each other. Okay. Sangha happens because we co-create it. And that's been the case from the very beginning. You know, one of the original classic meanings of Sangha and Buddha Dharma was the assemblage of enlightened beings, those who had gone beyond, who basically no longer attached themselves to the idea of a permanent abiding self. Once that fell away, they realized there was literally no barriers between them. Became of one mind, okay, and then became capable of perpetuating those teachings. The term later on came to apply to everyone who was part of the Buddha's monastic order, everyone who had taken vows, the 220 or 230 vows to live together in spiritual community. Okay. My own teachers here in the West have likewise over the years decided that it really was indeed appropriate to apply the term Sangha to gatherings such as ours as well. In conservative, classic Southeast Asian terminology, they don't use that term for lay people. But here in the West, we find that sanghas are in fact performing many of the same functions that monastic sanghas do in Asia. Okay. We really do come together and focus on doing these practices together, whether it's in a Sunday night meeting like ours or going off on retreat. We really focus together on teachings, you know, the teachings that I and other teachers offer here, the fact that we have a Dharma education program here in our Sangha now. Okay. So we are in the process of being that living tissue on the bark of this great tree. Okay, so we are participating in a very noble tradition. I completed my own training program it's been about 18 years or so now, and I'm staying in pretty regular touch with all others who I know who went through my program, as well as Don Morreale is also a graduate of it, as are Terry Ray and David Chernikoff, Peter Williams, and Jan Robinson Boulder. What I've learned, and what we've learned from sharing, you know, our experiences with each other about the sitting groups, where we offer teachings, is that they seem to go through these sort of growth stages over time and become somewhat more mature, more capable of sharing the Dharma in more in different ways and whatnot. And we also came to realize that in order for sanghas to function effectively, there needs to be a certain ratio between everyone who just kind of shows up on a Sunday night and those who actively give of themselves a form of dana, in order to make the Sangha be able to function, be able to do its job. Okay. We had a meeting of our service committee prior to getting together this evening to kind of observe together what is the Dharma, what is the reality of our Sangha right now, and the way we seek to serve and support it. And what we've come to realize is that that ratio, as our Sangha has grown and become somewhat more active, is a little out of whack. We don't literally have enough, we have an awful lot of work being done by a relatively small number of people in order to keep the Sangha functioning. And what we realize is that if we want to continue to grow, not just in numbers, but more importantly in our ability to have a rich Dharma education program, and our ability to provide networking opportunities for each other within the group, if we want to be able to sponsor affinity groups like the one on nonviolence or If we want to do one on sexual orientation and gender identity, one on the environment, that kind of activity needs active support. Okay. So providing that kind of support is in fact a form of dana. We are at a point in our Sangha where some of the people that have been, the relatively small number of people that have been doing so much work over this period of time are getting kind of burned out. And we are at a point where we really need to focus on how can we engage more of us in our Sangha to help our Sangha be, to help it function, to help it do its job well. So, the really important, you know, I've touched on some of the really important aspects of Sangha, some of the things it can do. For one thing, it's just kind of a training ground. Like if you were like sort of learning how to dance and you went to dance class, you know, you kind of dance with each other and get the moves down. Well, that's what we do when we get here. What is it like to try to speak mindfully, right? What's it like to really treat the people around you with respect, you know, and kind regard, understanding that they, just like you, are really doing what they can to make this Buddha Dharma their own, to speak and to act in ways that embody, you know, the best in what we each have to offer. So what I would like to do now, I thought about maybe breaking into small groups and whatnot, but just in the interest of time, what I would rather do instead is have us contemplate three questions together. The first two, we're going to discuss openly together, and then the third one I'm going to leave more up to you as a matter of silent reflection. So the first one that I would like to, what I'd like to do is to suggest a question to you to reflect upon for just about 3 minutes or so in silence. And then we're going to discuss what came up for you in terms of your answers. And then I'll do that again, and then a third time. So what I would like for you to do now is to find your sitting posture, allow the eyes to gently close, and ask yourself this question. What do I find most beneficial about attending this Sangha and being a part of the Sangha?
Could you repeat that?
Yes. What do I most value? What do I find most beneficial by, you know, as a result of coming to the Sangha and being part of the Sangha? Thank you for that period of reflection. And now, for anyone who feels comfortable doing so, I'd appreciate hearing what came to mind for you. Please.
I value the opportunity to be among and with people who understand and appreciate some of what's core to my way of being.
Thank you. Being with others who share your values in terms of what feels important to live with integrity in this life. Thank you. Thanks.
It focuses my attention because coming once a week or however often keeps it in the forefront. It's also provided good guidance for learning, you know, with the reading list and the learning group and all those other activities.
Thank you. Place to come and be centered so the mind is capable of really learning the Dharma. Yeah.
Well, and to take it home with
you. Yes. Provide some continuity in your practice. Good, thank you. Yes. Please.
A couple things. One of them is the just how wonderful it is to meditate in a large group. There just seems to be something happening with that that's just really powerful. And the other thing is we have a community of teachers, not just you. A lot of other teachers here, we get exposed to a lot of different experiences and viewpoints, and not just Theravada.
Yes.
And that's really helpful.
Yes, good, thank you. Right, I've heard so many people say, just as you have, it really feels different to sit with a group, you know. And that's certainly been my experience over the years as well. You know, so much of this, you know, Dharma study, and the going deep within when the mind's getting settled and you're doing the meditation practice. So much of it feels like you're kind of doing it alone, as I've heard this described as a practice we do alone together, you know. And there is something that can be so, I don't know, it's like the lift on the air rushing under the wings of an airplane. Sometimes it just can feel like there is this sort of leavening or this being carried or held when we're sitting with others who we know are likewise, you know, everybody in the room is going inside, is seeing what's going on in the mind, is being with their own consciousness with kind regard. And the fact that we are doing that together somehow can really have that kind of strengthening effect, you know, really kind of raise you up a little bit. So, right, it's a really true phenomenon. I appreciate that a lot. And the diversity of voices, absolutely, it's important. You know, there are so many forms that the Dharma takes, so many ways to take it in, that, yeah, it's good that we have that here as well. Please, anything else comes to mind? Yes, please.
I think it'd be difficult if I had to walk the path alone, but coming here is kind of like the bowl on the table. I feel like I'm supported in the companionship, and everything that I find here helps me continue with that support.
Yes, thank you. One of the, when the Buddha was teaching, in his teaching of anatta, or not self, you know, it's just really against the stream, it goes against the grain in terms of how our culture has trained us to think of our own consciousness and whatnot, and some of the other, you know, world religions, you know, the notion of a permanent and abiding self, and that's sort of who we are. And the Buddha said, when he was teaching, offering the teachings on anatta, said that belief in an isolated, permanent, abiding self is one of the things that can make us feel so lonely in life and so isolated. And it's me against the world, me struggling with what's going on in my own personality, or me struggling with my own feelings. And one of the aspects that's so greatly differentiates Buddha Dharma from other teachings is that very one, saying, you know, the self is something that is created as a result of mental activity. We self, uses a verb, we construct self, And sometimes that can be kind of handy, getting a social security number, getting a job, getting an education, signing a rental agreement on an apartment. It's really nice to be able to pretend to be a person in order to get those things done. But what the Buddha taught was, it's just something the mind does. It's like a vehicle, it's a way to get around, right? But we have this understanding that we share that that's not who we truly are. It's something the mind does, and sometimes it can be very useful. Sometimes it can be very imprisoning, and it can be very isolating. But we come together with this understanding that that's not who we truly are. And so we're able to, just a little bit, whenever we come together on a Sunday night, whenever you're going on a retreat, what you can do is allow the mind to become relaxed to the point where it's no longer incessantly creating the self. And we can let our guard down a little bit. And we can look at each other and say, who's really in there, We have our physical appearance, gender, hair color, age, and whatnot. But it's just, it's like Richard is fond of saying, because his Zen master did, these are all just like rental cars. It's the passenger that counts, right? Please.
I think for me, I came a long time ago for a while, and then I came for a while without being involved. And at that point, it was just to keep on track with my practice.
Yes.
Set every Sunday night. And then getting involved a little bit more, both in the teacher training group and also now just starting to, in the service committee.
Yes.
Not certainly to the degree of the couple people that do all the work, but my intention is I'm going to carve out a little piece that can fit my time, here's how much I can do. But I think what I gain from that is taking your Dharma practice from sitting to Dharma in relationship and action. Mm-hmm. And when you're practicing, many of us work in environments that aren't with people that share the same values or Dharma value system. So carving out a little piece of volunteer work to work with people that share those same belief sets, I think is for my personal growth in relationship that will translate into all areas of my life. And that is what I feel I'm starting to get out of it, which makes it more meaningful for me.
Can you share just a thought or two of how you feel that your service has really benefited or enriched or deepened your practice?
I think looking at me in relationship is part of Dharma practice.
Yeah.
It's not just sitting on the cushion and seeing how often I can get distracted. It's it's going out. It's helped me in relationships outside.
Yes.
To look at how I relate to other people.
Yes.
How I impact other people. As my boyfriend says, how can I keep the boss from coming out? being a boss in
yes,
the work
yes.
world. I'm really working on that, and this gives me the opportunity to do that. So
right.
That's huge.
It's
how Dharma and relationship is a huge part of
yeah.
where this goes,
absolutely.
Not just keeping inside yourself. But if you're feeling lonely, which we all have times of feeling lonely or isolated, or I think a lot of introverts are also drawn to the Dharma.
Uh-huh.
And so tendency to isolate might be. So
yeah.
How do you not do that?
Good.
Well, this would be a safe place to get involved a little bit more and feel a sense of ownership and community, like a real community,
yes.
that you actually get to know people.
Yes.
That helps.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Please.
I just want to kind of piggyback on that. I started out just kind of helping out with the sound system, and then that lived a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. And what I realized is that I've gotten so much more back than I ever expected, just in meeting really amazing people. And so when I'm doing these things, there's opportunities to get to know people that I wouldn't have gotten to know if I didn't do this.
Good.
And so it's just been, I've really enjoyed it. And I feel like I've gotten more out of it than what I'm putting in.
Good. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Second question. And again, you can allow yourself to settle in, close your eyes if you wish. What would I like our Sangha to do more of or do differently than it is now? What would I like our Sangha to do more of or to do differently than we are now?
I really would like to see more opportunities for extended practice. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be we go off on a week-long retreat. There have been some interesting experiments done in various sanghas because it's understood that people have work and family obligations and so on. My favorite that I've heard of is Cambridge Insight in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. They do what they call a sandwich retreat, which I think how it works is the first day of the retreat is Sunday, and they sit for the day on Sunday, and then they have a sangha meeting like we're having now. Mm-hmm. And then there's a kind of assignment that is given to the participants for the week. You know, during this week, concentrate on mindful work, more mindful, mindfulness in the workplace. I think they actually even go a little further than that, and they get together for dinner every night, and the Sangha and have a sitting meal and so on. But that may be way more involved than we could do. But I kind of like the idea of an extended sitting on a Sunday with a work assignment or a contemplation assignment, and then gather again the following Saturday.
Yes. Great. That, extended sitting practice opportunities together as a Sangha. Yeah, right. Absolutely. Please, Luke.
Well, I remember you did a couple of the one-day things where it was yoga and meditation, where there was a yoga teacher, and I had a yoga teacher. And, you know, I wanted, being a working person, it fit into my schedule.
Yes.
And the combination of those two things were really...
Good. Yeah, the restorative yoga and mindfulness meditation.
I found out I got into a deeper meditative state, and I like to segue off what Don said. You know, is that something that's a focus, you know, for the following week to be mindful of or something, which would be cool.
Okay, yeah. Good. Thank you. Please, other suggestions? Yeah.
I like that we're forming the affinity groups and having more of a focus on being engaged out in the world as well as here. I would like to see us continue to work on outreach to be more inclusive of color and life experience.
Yes. Good. No. There we go. Thank you.
Picking up on a couple of the ideas that are already there. I remember back in college, a group that I belonged to had chainsaws. We'd go out and cut firewood for people. Well, I don't think we're going to do that here in Denver. But the kinds of opportunities to work along with other people may be a valuable way to get to know what somebody else is involved with in the case. Or maybe if we simply had a circle where people would tell just a little bit about themselves. I'm amazed sometimes that I talk to somebody who's been here for 5 years, and I learned something. Wow, you did that? You know, that kind of thing that is invisible, because I think most of us are a little shy about sharing what is important to us.
Right. Thank you. I was at our service committee meeting. I was talking about some experiences I had when I was invited to come share teachings at the Against the Stream Sanghas here in Denver. I was the Dharma Punks groups that are started by Noah Levine. And these are mostly people 30 or younger. Many of them are pretty much covered head to toe, tattoos and piercings. Almost all of them are veterans of recovery groups. And their style of practice together is quite different. You know, they sit and do meditation practices like we do. But instead of, it was kind of an exception for me to come and offer little teachings. Mostly what they do, it's a little bit more like a recovery meeting. What they do is they kind of sort of give testimonials. Various of them will speak about if there is a particular challenge that occurred for them in the past week, and how they sought to apply the Dharma to that situation, and how they think perhaps they handled it differently than they would have if the Dharma hadn't been part of their lives. And so it seems to me that we sometimes may want to experiment with that model as well, just, you know, for that kind of just sharing of experience with the Dharma as well. So there's no shortage of models that I think we could start to look at in terms of different ways to go about what we're doing. And now, any other things to do that, please.
Yes, Don, when you spoke, I remembered that one time you were leaving that Saturday morning walking, sitting in meditation.
No, it was a day long.
Yeah.
I can't remember, was it once a month we did that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we could definitely revive that model. Yeah. Please.
Another little thing. Like yesterday, I went to the marsh and I looked, there were so many people there. I didn't see anybody that I knew, but I know there were a lot of people there that I knew. So before one of those big group events, why don't we just gather under the statue with the Indian on his horse?
Yep.
And so we'll have kind of a community.
Exactly, just a higher level of court, because I know some faith communities were doing that. Yeah, so just bring us to a higher level of coordination when we do things like that. Okay, last question. Am I ready to make a contribution of service to the Sangha I so value? Am I ready to make a contribution of service to the Sangha I so value? So I'm not going to ask for any testimonials after that. What we did in the service committee this afternoon is realize that there are certain areas of need that we are not really now able to meet at a level that we find to be quite sufficient. So what we're going to do starting next week is that we're going to have sign-up sheets back there on the table by the Donna box, and we'll basically be organizing the service committee into like subcommittees or sets of teams that would take responsibility for various functions that help keep us going. You know, so a team around setup and takedown, a team around the sound system, around outreach, various of the other kinds of functions that we've been discussing, things that, for instance, that we'd like to see us doing more of. We'd like to have about twice as many people sign up as would be needed on any given evening or whatnot. And the reason for that is because we come and go, we go on vacation, we have other obligations and whatnot. And if there's only one or two people that have a responsibility area, neither of them shows up, or only one does, puts a real strain. So what we'd like to do is have teams that are robust enough so that everybody on that team kind of knows how things work, so that there'll always be enough. We're still kind of discussing that. What we'll probably do is put it out there. We'll ask for people to say, would you be willing to be a member of this team for the next quarter, you know, like for the next 3 months or so? So it'd be finite, because I know a lot of times people, when they're asked to, you know, step up and serve, they get worried about whether they're going to get overloaded or whether they're going to get left holding the bag, and we don't want anyone to feel that to be the case. So that's sort of where our thinking is right now. And the whole purpose of this evening, as you can probably surmise, is a kind of a sort of an awakening, I guess, to the needs of the Sangha that maybe a lot of people simply haven't been aware of up until now. Because one of our service committee members who recently joined one said, you know, until I signed on to this committee, I had no idea all the effort that went into making this a possibility, and I had no idea how few people were doing it. And so this is an opportunity to serve. It's another form of dana, in addition to the financial contributions that are made. Yes, please, Ruth.
Let me put out the list for sign up.
Exactly. The idea is to have, for each of these teams, it will have a description of what that's about, you know, what it entails and whatnot, so you have some sense of what might be the most appropriate one for you. Good, we'll definitely do that. Yes, please.
I started coming and sitting in October, I think, and just recently started doing more than just putting my chair away at the end of the night, maybe say today. And I just wanted to say that it's also just really fun. Like, it's been so nice to spend time with everyone and people who are on the same path. But just be part of tonight together. You're like, ooh, it's just a lot of fun.
Good, good, thank you. Appreciate you saying that. Okay, yes, please.
I'm the one behind Dolores talking, but one thing I want to mention in terms of all the work that goes into the Sangha, the real hero here is over there in the last row. She does more work than me.
Yeah. Plus it's easy to embarrass her, yeah. Of course. On behalf of the Sangha, our deepest gratitude to all of you who have been making it possible for us to get together and practice the Dharma together over these years. Thank you so much. Let's take a sitting posture one more time, please. May we live with ease, safe from all inner and outer harm. May we be there for each other as members of our Sangha. May we realize the true richness and value of the Dharma as we seek to serve it. May we all be happy and peaceful and free. All beings now alive, all beings yet to be born, all beings both seen and unseen, all the beings in all realms of existence. May we all be happy. May we all be peaceful. May we all be free. Have a safe journey home. And as we've been doing, for those of you who are going to be walking in a particular direction down this street or that street, if you want to gather together just outside the door there and walk together,